Podcast time, everybody. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, friends, frenemies, boys and girls, disciples of drifting. It is Rambling About Cars, episode 4, MotorOne.com's official podcast. I am co-host Christopher Smith. Across the screen, as always, co-host Chris Bruce. What do we got going on today, Bruce?
Things are going good. You know, I have to really thank our viewers this week, or for last week, really. We broke 1,000 views on our third episode. And I know in YouTube terms, 1,000 views is nothing. But Smith, you and I worked really hard to revive this thing. Within 3 episodes, having over 1,000 views on YouTube, I really got to thank everyone who's watched. You know, we want to take this farther, obviously, that we want this to be just the beginning. But thank you guys. It really, really means a lot. Tell people about the podcast, rate and review the podcast, comment on YouTube, comment, send us podcast at MotorOne.com. It's just nice to see that kind of growth. So we appreciate it and thank you.
And yeah, if you're catching us on YouTube, I mean, like and subscribe.
If you're catching it anywhere, Spotify. iTunes, Spotify, like. And if not that, tell your car buddy that we're kind of cool. Tell them about us. We're marginally cool. If they don't like us, they bounce off of our personalities. That's fine. But maybe they'll like us.
We are marginally cool. We're not as cool as the special guest that's with us. Why don't you take us there, Mr. Bruce?
That's right. Our fearless leader, our boss, global editor. Is that the right title?
Yeah, global editor-in-chief is generally what I go by.
Okay, global editor-in-chief, I'm sorry. John Neff is our guest today.
Hey, guys.
Yay!
Yeah.
It's so nice to not have to call you Supreme Overlord for once.
Yeah,
Supreme Leader. Yeah, no, that's only during working hours.
Okay, I got you. This is after hours.
This is after hours, yeah.
Smith and I, we have to be on our best behavior since the boss is here, but we have some questions to ask you. And Mr. Smith has those written down, and we got some things we want to know.
We do, because, I mean, you are our boss. You're also a cool guy, but you're our boss. On Rambling About Cars, though, you have to contend with the Chris's. And before our guests come on, we have to just kind of feel them out a little bit to kind of do like a little psych test, automotive style. So 5 quick fire questions. Just answer the first thing that comes to your head.
Oh, boy.
This will not be revealing and telling of your true self in any way, shape,
good.
Or form.
Good.
Okay. Favorite 80s car? Go.
86 Ford Taurus.
86.
First year. Revolutionized.
We'll give you that. Okay. Favorite 90s car, go.
91 Ford Taurus SHO.
Or a lot of Tauruses.
Or GMC Typhoon. Or 92 Dodge Viper. This is my dream garage, so I'm just filling it out.
Okay.
And most of my dream cars come from the 90s.
Okay. Well, hey, a lot of bull there. Little pun intended. We'll take that. That's good. Favorite car movie all time?
One of the Cannonball Run movies. Okay. Either the first or second.
I've never seen the second. Is it worth seeing?
See the first.
They do not age well. They would not ever be made in this day and age.
They but really wouldn't.
I just have the memory of me being, you know, a probably young teen watching them, and they were so funny and cool and help, you know, definitely helped me get excited about cars. I've since watched, I think, the second one, and it did not hold up.
Okay.
But I'm going to pick that as – I'm trying to think of other favorite car movies, and I don't know. Can I ask
one?
Well, I wanted to ask what's yours. Like, what am I missing? What's your favorite car movie?
Oh, gosh. My favorite car movie? You know, I probably have to go with Smokey and the Bandit just because my father is a retired truck driver. And his CB handle back in the day was actually Snowman. Before Smokey and the Bandit,
nice.
He was the original Snowman. So that one holds a pretty dear place in my heart.
Nice. What about you, CB? What's yours?
I'm going to be a pretentious a-hole. have either of you guys heard of Tulane Blacktop?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
Dennis Wilson, and I can't think of the folk song artist. Anyway, the two of them are in a drag prepped 55 Chevy that they drive around, and they meet up with this guy with a brand new, at the time, GTO Judge. And they decide that they're going to race for pink slips from, I believe it's Wyoming to Washington, D.C. And it's just basically people driving through the American West. And it's really kind of a pretentious movie, but it's all basically every shot is either within the cabin of the GTO or within the cabin of the 55 Chevy. And it's one of my favorites. So
this kind of tells me that there aren't great car movies in recent years. Like, I'm trying to think of of course, Fast and Furious comes up, but I was
close to saying Fast Six. Just because
if I had to pick a Fast and the Furious movie, I'd pick the original. But and again, yes, because it has an SVT Lightning in it.
that it does. Okay. You still have two more questions, though.
I do.
Let's go. I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to throw us off here. Okay. Quick fire question. Heated seats or heated steering wheel?
Heated steering wheel.
Heated steering
wheel. It gets hot instantly. The seats take too long.
Oh, wow. Gotta give that seats like 30 seconds. Okay. We'll go with that.
He lives in Cleveland. It gets cold there. Although you live in South Dakota, it gets cold there.
Yeah, believe me, I've tested both, and I do not want to live without. I would choose to live without heated seats before I would choose to give up the heated.
Okay,
steering
wheel. That's fair. Last question. This one might have you thinking here a little bit. If a fully autonomous level 5 car was available on the market right now to buy, would you buy it as your daily main vehicle?
I mean,
fully autonomous, you get in it. There's no controls, no nothing.
I mean, like, you could never control it.
No, level five means no redundant controls.
No redundancies.
No. And I think that's the caveat, because I have a car with driver assist systems. I have a Model 3 and I have full self-driving on it. And, you know, when I'm on the highway, it's driving. I've got my hand on the wheel, but it's basically driving. And I like that, but I don't want to give up the ability never to control the car. So that's the, I think that's the hinge or that's the caveat that hinges on, is never having control.
Okay.
I don't think I'd do that.
Fair answers. We'll
leave that for the taxis and the buses and the, and that. I want my,
you passed the Chris's evaluation. We'll give you that. What do you think out there, listeners?
Yes. So you were the first one to take this test, and anyone who comes on after you will have to take this test.
We'll have to take the test.
So, and I'm really the only one taking it blind. Everyone else can go back and look at the questions.
Well,
that's true.
We'll have different questions going forward.
Oh, okay. We might evolve things. Yeah, we'll see.
We can evolve things. Listeners, what do you think about John's answers? Podcast@motorone.com. Shoot us an email. Let us know. Now, let's get into some discussion that might connect a little bit with autonomy and self-drive and electric and electricity going forward in vehicles. We've been chatting about this, not necessarily heated, but
it got kind of heated. Like, I had to leave the chat for a little while.
It's always hard to tell in the chat room because there's no, you know, inflection or tone. But I did picture, like, Chris, you and me screaming at each other over, like, the lunch table if we had an office.
I wasn't screaming. So let me set this up for everybody. General Motors has a new logo. And it's similar to the old logo. It's still a square box.
It has the letters G and M on it.
That's, it has the letters G and M on it. For those on YouTube, Mr. Bruce is just throwing it up here on our screen. We can see it's similar. It's a rebrand, right? So the debate going on in the MotorOne.com universe is whether this is a good thing, a bad thing, a ridiculous thing, a terrible move, a smart move. Let me give you a little bit more background. I don't really mind this rebrand that much, but I also come from a marketing background. I had a marketing career long before I went full-time into journalism. So I think maybe I get a slightly different viewpoint of the rebranding process and why companies tend to do it. But John, why don't you lead off? Because that's the reason you're here. John is the one that opposes my viewpoint. And I think
Let me just wait one second here. I get to play referee here. I'm calling the balls and strikes. If someone starts taking too long, I get veto power, because my thing is I have a completely different opinion than both of you that I will express at the end.
Okay.
But also what comes up in this discussion of rebrands is that we've been seeing a lot of them, a lot of them just in the past year. And I am going to share an image with you guys right now of three of them, what we've seen. So Volkswagen simplifies their emblem. BMW simplifies their emblem. Nissan simplifies their emblem. All of this has happened in the past year. And there are other examples that I could pull up. There's Maserati. There is
Kia.
Maserati's the notable one. Kia. So this has kind of been bubbling up. And then this GM one came up. And Chris and John in our Motor One chat kind of started going at things. And so I want to give them the opportunity both to kind of air their feelings about this badge. And then when they're done, I will come in at the end and give my opinion, which is fairly different from both of theirs. So I'm going to pop up an image of the GM badge. So you
and actually,
they are going to tell you how they feel about it.
The image, Mr. Neff, I yield the floor to the distinguished gentleman here.
The image you popped up of the GM, the new GM logo, Bruce, was in black and white. It's forgiving. That is, I would say, the best version of the logo. Here's it is. Okay. There's the gradient one, which I think adds a level of ridiculousness to the logo. So for those not viewing on YouTube, it is this new GM logo with a gradient that goes from aquamarine blue into like the traditional GM blue into another blue. All right. So my views on this, when I see it, my first impression is that it is juvenile. That's the word I used that Chris and I were arguing over in our chat. I say juvenile because I think it looks like GM created an iPhone app and this was the icon for it. Or, you know, this is something, this looks like the icon for a new piece of Adobe software next to your Photoshop and your Illustrator. It's trying to look high tech and not bleeding edge, but more like, you know, I'm part of the software revolution, which is true. That's happening in cars. Software and computing power is growing exponentially more important.
Let me take a note of that really quick. You just said it's true.
Sure. That is granted. And of course, another reason that the word juvenile comes to mind is they went from two capital letters, which is proper grammar for it's an acronym, General Motors, you know, and they went to two lowercase letters. So that has a juvenile edge to it to me. This gradient is ridiculous, and a first year art student would probably create that in Photoshop. And some people say like it's supposed to evoke a plug, and I guess that's supposed to be in the negative space of the M and the underline of the M. Maybe I don't know. I don't really see it. I don't get that as a strong message from the logo. Now, when I say it's bad, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. My perspective is that if I were running the company, or if I were an executive in the boardroom that day, I would have raised my hand and said, we need to rethink this. This is not what we want to do. That said, I don't think this logo ruins GM. I actually don't think logos and names of companies have that much power, especially if your product is good. If your product is good, it can overcome a logo or a bad name. And I say that having worked at a couple websites that had ridiculous bad names and were still successful because they were just good websites. And people looked past the name and just, you know, they thought of the brand of the site as what the product is. And the name took on a new meaning. And I think this logo could be the same way. You know, if GM succeeds in its EV revolution, we'll probably look at the logo in a completely different way than we do today, when GM's future EV plans are all promises and vaporware right now. So that's how I see it.
Okay, fair enough. Tell the truth, John. Do you have floor mats over your floor mats in your car?
Floor mats over my floor mats. No, I have fitted rubber floor mats I took the original floor mats out.
Okay, so you took the original floor mats out and you have other floor mats. I'm just trying to gauge your level of what's the proper word, fussiness, maybe. I guess I don't understand why this bothers you so much. General Motors has, with many, let's be honest, all automakers right now, they're going into uncharted waters. They're going into new territory. For the first time really since the car was invented, we're looking at completely new levels of technology, completely new levels of propulsion. General Motors especially is, a lot of people would argue that they kind of led the charge in electric vehicles with the Impact back in the day, but that ended up being rather a failure. And then they kind of went back to their roots with just, you know, big.
Many people would say
SUVs.
Many people would say they sabotaged the EV revolution back in the day.
Possibly for big oil. There is a conspiracy theory there. The point being, GM is working on going forward, and arguably they might have a bigger job going forward, you know, a little bit more of a daunting task ahead of them than other manufacturers. From a marketing perspective, if you want to try to do something of a rebrand, and I consider this something of a rebrand, this isn't a completely new item by any means. I mean, you're getting all fussy over the lowercase letters. It's like, yeah, so I mean, Kia's new logo arguably doesn't even have letters. It's just squiggles that sort of form Kia. Nobody's really saying anything about that. I mean, Audi's logo doesn't even say Audi. It's just four circles. It's not the capitalization. It's the brand recognition. It's the brand identity. And when you look at the new GM logo, there is absolutely no way anybody is going to mistake that for anything other than GM's logo. It's still square.
That's
it's
not still, fair.
What do you mean it's not fair? It's GM square. In it. It's still blue, right? It still has the letters. The M is underlined. I mean, it's still easily recognizable, has GM's logo, but it's a new take. Maybe it dives into a little bit of the app button, but you know what? GM's old logo was a button. I mean,
let me phrase my opinion this way. I think at best it was unnecessary. At worst, it is a drag on what the company is trying to do.
How is it a drag? It's a logo. It's a familiar looking logo.
I think it goes from unnecessary to possibly a drag, because A, we're talking about it and everyone's going to have an opinion and some people aren't going to like it. So it can be a drag that way.
But if we're talking about it though, isn't that what GM wants?
That's true. And I've always espoused that any type of opinion is good when you're talking about marketing. But it also kind of smacks of a marketing department. Like, GM is one of the biggest companies in the world. It has one of the biggest marketing departments in the world. And it kind of smacks like the marketing department felt like, we don't have anything to do. Let's do this. I don't see why it was necessary. And now you're showing an older GM logo. Was that the logo immediately prior to this one or an earlier one?
No, this is the one immediately prior. This is it lasted decades.
And I mean, really, aside from the small changes in how they perceived reflection, this is the same GM logo that's existed for decades.
Yeah.
And what does it look like? It's square. It says GM in the middle. Both letters are underlined instead of one. It's really not that different.
I'm not arguing that the new one is like too different from the old one. That's not my argument. I just don't think as a design change, it communicates what I would want a brand redesign to communicate if I were leading GM.
So if GM tomorrow came out with an amazing vehicle, an amazing product. Because as you've said, let the product sell itself. Don't try to dress it up with what you're calling basically a gimmick here with this new logo. Would you not buy that vehicle because the logo is ridiculous?
I wouldn't let a logo stop me. Like I said, I own a Model 3. That logo's dumb. You know, the Tesla logo is dumb. It looks like, I don't know, half a Batman logo or something. No, I don't care about logos. And especially GM logos aren't on cars.
Oh, listen to yourself. You'd certainly care about logos.
Do you remember in like the 90s where GM started putting the GM logo on like the front fender of every car?
Yes.
And that was actually, I think, one of the best versions of that logo. You know, it was just very kind of cool and flat and simple. Like I said, I wouldn't have gone this direction. And I don't think I would have kind of, you know, let me go back to another point. Chris, you showed the logos from Volkswagen, BMW, and Nissan. And you pointed out they all went from like a 3D type logo to a flat logo, right?
They did.
Yeah, but it's called a flat logo. And GM did the same thing. It's completely flat. There's no texture or depth to it at all. That was a trend that started in smartphones like 5 years ago. Like, I don't know why automakers are suddenly hopping on a design trend that really got popular many years ago and not recently.
To be fair, the VW logo is almost identical to the one in the 40s, which politically is maybe iffy, but you're right on the rest of it. Yeah.
I wasn't drawing that parallel. But.
Is there something that we don't know about here? Are automakers going to these more simplified logos because it's more cost effective for them, be it in some of the technology they're employing, how they're producing things?
It's tenths of pennies.
I think it's marketing departments doing trend studies and deciding and maybe there is a good case for a rebranding, for a logo redesign. The fact that they're all going from kind of older logos that had depth and dimension to flat logos, like I said, that's not a new design trend. That's like, you're way behind the curve if you're doing that to your logo in 2021 or late 2020. Mm. And by the way, I'm not saying that the VW, BMW, or Nissan logos are bad. As a matter of fact, I think the Nissan logo redesign is the best of this group of redesigns because they changed something in the logo, but they didn't flip it on its head. They didn't deviate too far. It was just a nice, simple change. Whereas, I mean, BMW and VW, their logos, they pretty much just made them flat. You know, they took the shading and dimension out of it and just made them flat as they were before. Like I said, I agree that I don't think the new GM logo is going to prevent anyone from buying a GM vehicle. But I do think this whole rebranding of being like, you know, a more youthful, a more tech oriented, an EV brand, I think it's a little early. They have unveiled a lot of plans for their EV revolution and changing over their fleet to all these EVs. But it's all vaporware right now. The only EV they sell right now is the Bolt, which, while okay, is merely okay. And they don't actually have anything out in the field. And what they've announced in terms of specs for all these new EVs, they're going to come out in 1 to 2 years and be barely competitive based on the specs they're announcing now. So I have reservations about what GM is doing in the EV space that they need to prove out by actually getting these vehicles to market and showing me that they can be a leader in the EV revolution. And this rebrand is like saying today that they've already achieved that. I guess that's a little annoying to me.
Now, see, my marketing brain thinks completely different. You don't want to reestablish your brand after you've already done something. As you were saying earlier, they're behind the times. This whole flattening thing, making things look like apps, was 4 or 5 years. I think that's a ridiculous point, but that's beside the point. You don't want to take your brand and just let it flounder with an image that is uncertain while the rest of the company runs away, especially in a different direction. Yeah, GM is looking to go in a different direction. Guess what? All automakers are going to be going in a very different direction. Like it or not, if an automaker wants to survive in the next 10 years, they're going to have to be building electric cars. They're going to have to be building some decent electric cars.
For sure. And all of them have announced, they will be.
So why not right now with the announcements of the GMC Hummer, with their plans for Ultium announced? There's a lot of vaporware there. Yeah, for sure. But we're not talking about just some little upstart that nobody's heard of that comes out with a rendering of a vehicle and say, hey, this is going to be the next big thing. I mean, like, let's give GM a little bit of credit here for having a 100 plus year history, right? I mean,
sure.
Going forward, I mean, they're not going to just say this and then continue to build, you know, 18 mile per gallon SUVs for the next 10 years. Well, they could. And if they do, this logo will be their last. Well,
and by the way, not warning on you guys. So,
Okay.
1 minute each to make your points.
GM and Ford and Ram, they'll all be selling gas-powered trucks for the next 10 years. None of them are going to give up on that until it's ripped from their hands. Here's my problem with companies like GM that are 100 years old and have grown so large and just do business a traditional way. They have these big marketing departments, and they spend time and resources and money relaunching their brand when they could have spent that money on making good EVs. Now, they may make good EVs anyway, but I look at it and I say, I don't care about all this stuff. Just make the best car on sale. And I don't think you can say that GM has always done that. And I think you could argue, well, maybe GM could have spent a little less on marketing and a little more on product. It always goes back to the product. I can forgive a brand. I can forgive a lot if the product is great.
Counter argument?
Well, I mean, of course, branding matters, John. I mean, every company, every business, every person that's involved in trying to sell a product knows you can build the best product. And if nobody knows about it, if it's not catching anybody's eye, it doesn't mean a damn thing. From my perspective here, GM saw this might be a good opportunity to go through with a slight rebrand. And I do say slight because I've seen some rebranding attempts that have just been disasters where nobody even knows what the hell is going on. This logo, it's a modern logo. It identifies GM going in a new direction while still being easily recognizable as General Motors. I don't have any problem with it whatsoever. I don't see it being juvenile. I don't see it being ridiculous. I see it as an American automaker trying to give itself a new image. Now, you are correct. The product has to back up everything that they're doing. But you don't just launch a product without having some sort of marketing plan in mind.
Your minute.
Yep. You cannot win that way.
So I'm going to give myself a minute and 30 seconds here just to do this quick. I think I sit a little closer to John than I originally thought from the chat session. And the immediate thought that comes to mind is what my dad says, which is, talk is cheap and beer costs money. And coming out with a new logo is talk. Like, you know, I'm sure they invested millions in coming out with a new logo, but product and putting the right people behind that product is what is actually going to make a difference. And GM has an iffy history behind that. You guys talked about the EV1 thing. It's, you know, I also think of the Cadillac ELR, that whenever they kind of get close to wanting to get into green vehicles, as soon as there's any sort of failure or even just a downside to it, that they walk away. And so I want this new logo to mean that they're going to do something truly new, but I'm going to wait and see, because they can put out as many new logos as they want, but until the product is actually there and they prove that the Bolt EUV, the Celestiq, the Lyriq are good products in that space, in that electric space? I don't know. So yeah, I sit between you guys, but
you're not wrong. The pressure is now on General Motors to back up this rebrand with exactly what they're trying to accomplish with this rebrand, saying, hey, look, we have a new direction. Here's where it starts. Now see where it leads. And if they don't, then hey, this will all be for nothing.
Maybe goes back to what you said, that
but this is where it starts.
You rebrand first and then you put up or shut up.
Would you,
GM's past, they have often shut up once they've tried. So
We're over a year out until they start selling a vehicle with Ultium batteries. That's what makes me feel like it's a little early. Maybe if they had launched this, like, you know, right when they debuted the production version of one of these EVs, but they're not going to have the GMC Hummer EV on sale in 2021 at all, probably. So mm-hmm. I just feel like it's a little early when like I said at the beginning, the only EV they're selling right now is the Bolt. At least in the US, and the next EV they're selling, the Bolt EUV, doesn't have Ultium batteries either. So it feels a little premature. Maybe I'd be more comfortable with it if it were, you know, a year from now.
You're not wrong there. I can agree with you on that point. Okay. What I guess my response would be, they kind of have to be premature at this point because look at how fast things are going. With their competitors. I mean, Tesla launched the Cybertruck. What? Has it been 2 years since the Cybertruck launched? Almost
made one, to be fair.
And they haven't even made one. And nobody's talking about Tesla being premature. The Tesla owner isn't talking about Tesla being premature.
We're talking about being premature with logos. I mean, every single automaker who's launching EVs is debuting them like
way too far in
2 years,
I think.
Yeah. I agree with that. I don't like that either. But it all comes down to what you've got on sale today. And I mean, Tesla is an automaker that has 4 EVs on sale today and they're tops in their category. GM has one.
Oh.
And most automakers have one. And I feel for GM because companies like Tesla and Rivian and Lucid, all they sell are EVs. They don't have to answer the hard questions about what product am I going to push for people to buy, a gas-powered car that I make a ton of profit on or a new EV?
No, lots of good points there. Lots of good points.
Yeah.
I still don't think it's a ridiculous move on GM's part. I think from a strategy standpoint, I think it's a smart move, but you both are right. And now GM, you have to put up or shut up.
Yeah. Yep.
But I think it's time to thank the people that comment on our show.
Yes.
Smith, do you want to go or would you like me to go first since mine is shorter?
Why don't you go ahead and go first? I mean, we've been very happy with the response we've been getting back, especially as we're just getting off the ground. It's only going to get bigger and better from here. And yes, if you're listening out there, not only do we want to hear from you, I mean, we want to interact with you. I mean, we've had that just here in the last couple of weeks with some great readers and listeners that have chimed in. So Bruce, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you got there?
Sure thing. This is from YouTube. This is a reader. I believe his name is Nabil M. And he says a good winter beater cheap car that no one talks about is the Jaguar X-Type with its all-wheel drive system. And as a winter beater, I think he's actually right. Those cars are into the single-digit thousands of dollars these days. You know, it's technically a Ford Mondeo underneath, mm-hmm. but you get a Jaguar badge on it and a little bit of the Jaguar luxury. So, yeah, I can't fight that. Do I have any opinions?
Do you guys know if like the X type has higher labor costs for repairs or even a higher component cost for repairs because it's a Jaguar?
I don't know specifically, but I mean, it has the badge. So I'm sure that's the case. I mean, it probably does.
But the thing we were talking about winter beaters is that it needs to last you 3 to 5 months. So it's not a car that you're necessarily going to keep. It's a car you're going to buy, you're going to drive for the winter, and then you're going to turn around.
And hopefully it doesn't kill you in the process. And this is in response to last week's episode where we were talking about winter beaters and what makes a coupe, what makes a sedan. John, you had something you were going to say there.
Yeah, I want to suggest an alternative. This guy right here, the Subaru Legacy SUS sport utility sedan. Now you could get a second generation Subaru Legacy Outback, you know, the wagon version, or third generation one or whatever. But for, I think for the second and third generation Legacy, maybe the fourth, they had a sedan version, which was a precursor to the Outback, and it was called the SUS. So it's like the Subaru Legacy sedan raised. I always see them with awesome two-tone paint jobs, and they have a spoiler on the trunk. I have no idea why, but that's awesome. And of course they're all-wheel drive, so they're great in snow.
I almost bought one of those out here in South Dakota a few years ago. There was one at a dealership and it had a manual transmission, and I think they were like $2,200 or $2,500 or something like that. But you know, as I talked with Bruce last week, the only thing that really worries me there, does it come with an extra head gasket? Because, man, do those cars just love to eat head gaskets.
I wouldn't have any experience with that, but that's good to know if I ever get one of these, because I want one.
Yeah, you'll want to get one with a fresh head gasket, or just do an engine swap. You know what? a newer WRX engine and one of those, that would just be...
Ooh, that'd be fun.
That would be awesome. Now, that's an interesting sedan, and I love that you pointed out that it's the SUS, the Sport Utility Sedan. Yeah. Another commenter that we had, and I will confess, this is actually my brother-in-law who's a big fan of the show. He's also a car guy. John, you'll appreciate this. He once owned a Dodge Dakota convertible.
Oh, nice. I was just looking at Shelby Dodge Dakotas online last night.
Yeah. So I mean, he knows cars pretty well. His name's Brian. He wrote a book. I can't really read it all here, but he was chiming in on our debate of what makes a coupe, what makes a sedan. And it goes back to what we said in the episode. This is just the tip of the iceberg of this discussion. We're going to come back and revisit it because there are so many different perspectives on this. I was quoting, I guess, what would be considered a lot of the traditional definitions for coupe and sedan. He was pointing out that, you know, a sweeping roof line doesn't really define a coupe. A lot of people, I certainly see that a lot of people would agree with that. The more traditional definition does talk about that swooping roof line. And he talks about fastbacks. Fastback, really, it's a swooping roof line, but a fastback isn't quite the same. The fastback is where it just kind of strakes itself all the way back. Whereas when I'm talking about a swooping roof line, I'm talking about more of just like a curved roof line that kind of arches back. His definitions for coupe include two-door hardtop and one row of seating, can be a bench or bucket seats. Fastback, sweeping roofline, two-door hardtop, can be a coupe or a sedan. Doesn't really matter with the doors there, coupe or sedan. Sedan, hardtop with two rows of seating, can be two doors or four. He has a subcategory here, a sedanette, and I really like this. A two- or four-door sedan with a roofline similar to a fastback, where the rear window and the trunk lid are separate, but they're at the same angle.
The so same angle of that? Like, I'm trying to think of what vehicle that is.
If you look at, like, the very end of the first-generation Mustang, like the big 71 to 73 Mustangs.
Yeah.
When you look at those, the rear window and the trunk are pretty much right at the same angle. So something like that is what he's referring to there. At least for the sedan definition, that car, I would consider that. Actually, I would consider that car more of a coupe, not necessarily even a fastback. And then he talks about shooting brakes, wagons, it says. I won't get into that this time around because I think that's great fodder for a future episode because we didn't even get a chance to touch on that. I will say this. I am familiar with very specific definitions between a shooting brake and a station wagon. Now, station wagon and estate, that those terms are really interchangeable. You go across the pond, the estate is just what they call a station wagon here in the States. But shooting brake does have some very specific criteria that we'll talk about in a future episode. I think that would make a great follow-up. There's so many things to talk about here. And as always, podcast@motorone.com. Send us your email. Send us your opinions. We want to hear from you. We want to interact with you. We want to share these opinions. The car world needs more opinions, right?
Yep. And also, just real quick here, we still want to find our goal, or one of our little goals, is to find the earliest in-print use of muscle car.
Yes.
So far, we're at 1965. But the fact that it's in a Chevy ad and in quotes means that it must be earlier. You know, it's got to be very, very late 50s, early 60s. So if you know, the people out there have seen stuff that we haven't. If you know of a use of muscle car, that term in print, whether it's muscle car, one word like we saw, or two words, doesn't matter. And you know of a pre-65, please let us know, because it's just kind of a fun hunt that we're on.
It is almost like the Holy Grail. You know, where did muscle car first get used? So yeah, email us, let us know. Bruce, what else we got going on here for the second half of the show?
So I didn't talk much during the first segment. I'm gonna talk a lot during the second segment.
We see where this is going. So but buckle up, folks.
Yeah. So I need to take you back to Halloween of 2005. And after hunting around, my parents, as a very generous gift, I was a sophomore in college. My parents bought me a 2006 model year, obviously 2005, Mini Cooper. And so my birthday is November 7th. I came down the following weekend after they had picked it up for me and got it. And that is the car that is still in our fleet today. And I was going to snap a picture of it for this podcast, but it just went into the shop, not for any mechanical reason. They're doing an oil change. They're changing out the front brakes. And the shifter, after so long, the bushings are getting kind of sloppy, and I want to get those fixed. So I am a longtime Mini owner.
Nice.
And also today, we saw the refresh of the latest generation Mini Cooper, Cooper S. I believe they technically call it the hard top now, but it'll always be the Cooper to me, the convertible. And it's bad. It's really bad.
Is it though? I mean, it looks like a Mini.
No.
I know it's a refresh, no, it still looks like a Mini to me.
You're crazy. Okay. Here is the first production. This is the first year. This is an 01.
That's an 01. It looks like the new one.
No, that is a classic design. The first gen Mini is an absolutely classic design.
I feel like
first gen modern.
I feel like Mini is trying to take a cue from Porsche and it's like the 911 of little cars like that.
It's not though, because they keep making it bigger and they keep messing with it.
Okay.
But that's the 911. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It is.
And actually, that's not the photo I wanted to share, but it does show two things. First off, they added googly eyes for some reason. So you've got this white portion, you've got a black center, and then you've got black around the edges with the white in the middle. And it looks like it's just ready to move around whenever you drive the car.
Yeah.
Secondly, they added this weird black goatee around the opening for the grill. So you can see it on the top, you can see it on the bottom, and then it outlines it on the sides. I've got another good image that I'm about to share of that. So you can see, interestingly, in lighter colors, you don't see the googly eyes as much, but it accentuates
the goatee.
And John, as an Ohioan, I wonder if you'll agree with me about this. I think the designer of the new, of this facelifted Mini Cooper is from Ohio. How come? I think, are you familiar with the horror movie host, The Son of Ghoul?
Yes.
Wow.
So
Is that an Ohio thing? Because I've never heard of this. What is this?
There's your googly eyes. The new Mini is the son of ghoul of cars.
That is some deep, that's a deep cut. That's a deep Ohio cut.
Am I right? Wrong though?
If you're listening to this, like on Spotify or Apple, you need to go to YouTube.
Yeah. I mean,
it's got the goatee. It's got googly eyes. Here it comes. Here's Mini again.
I do think, I think the refresh has just made it more fussy. The refresh just added busyness where it wasn't really called for. There are some other things about the redesign that are kind of cool. Like, they can do some new color fades on the roof. That's totally innovative. And the Union Jack is now the standard taillight. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't even see the goatee before you called it that. And now that's all I can
see. I can't see anything else now.
Yeah.
I can't see anything else.
And it's got these two new vertical slits on the sides of the front bumpers that, like, do they really go anywhere? Do they really do anything? Probably not.
And so I'm going, again, I am very sorry for the people on YouTube or for the people listening on iTunes or Spotify. This is a very visual reference, in part because even now, the Mini's not a bad car to drive. Like,
no,
it's not. It's just that this refresh looks bad. And to see it, you need to see these comparisons because it's bad.
Yeah. So. I agree that it's overly complicated. There are a lot of design features that are there just for the sake of being there. And that's not always a good thing. But I don't see your quirky Ohio reference quite as much as I think you two see it.
Okay, that's fine.
I mean, it still looks an awful lot like the, you know, like the original one when they relaunched it. I don't see quite the same
the concept from 1997 that led to the production version with pretty minor changes. There's kind of a nip and tuck here and there.
I'd like to make a larger point. And this again goes to traditional automakers that kind of just do what they've always done. So this is a mid-cycle refresh, which is what usually happens after a car has been on sale for 3 to 4 years since a full redesign, and they kind of give it a nip tuck. And I don't know why they do this, especially if the original design that they're tweaking is good. If it's good, just leave it alone and spend that money that you were going to spend on the refresh on giving it the best hardware underneath the skin. Make improvements that matter to people, because these design tweaks don't. You're not going to sell more cars because it's got a tweaked design. As a matter of fact, you're going to alienate people who bought the design right before this, because now you've kind of made a separating line between their old car and the new car. I think instead you should stick with good designs as long as possible. That's good. That's a good way to save money and spend it in the right places. And I think you look at a car like the Dodge Challenger, which has had to do that, not really out of a smart strategy, but out of necessity, because, you know, Dodge doesn't have a lot of money to spend redesigning the Challenger. And so rather than redesign it a bunch of times, they have spent it on new engines to throw in there, new special editions, and they've kept it fresh and attractive, despite the fact that they haven't given it a nip tuck in forever.
I mean, I don't know that it's fresh, but I mean, you can't argue with the fact that
people are buying it.
They're still selling. I mean, yeah. I mean, completely outsold Camaro. I think by like 2 to 1
and last it's year. The design is good. It's has an element of timelessness to it. And I think you could argue the Mini does too. You don't have to keep tweaking it. Just go with it and just keep making the car better in the ways that count.
I guess I'm somewhere in the middle. I mean, of course, design matters. Bruce and I devoted pretty much half of the first episode to explaining how BMW is just going completely bonkers right now with their 4 Series. And I think they're going to see that in sales as people flock to other vehicles. What I see with the new Mini or with this refresh, they're trying too hard. I see a lot of little things, little tweaks, not for really the betterment of the car or really even for some sort of striking visual appeal to me. It feels like they're just doing some of the stuff because it's like, geez, guys, we got to do something. Well, maybe we could put some little tiny vents in the corners of the front fascia. Exactly. We see other people doing that. So we should do that. Don't follow the other brands. Come up with your own design. And I guess my criticism would be, I see Mini trying to do a lot of things to mimic other brands because they think maybe they have to instead of they want to, or it's a natural fit. But that being said,
but look at that. It's not like googly eyes and a goatee.
No, so you're showing the Cooper S model, and it is just
the hood scoop. Yes.
It is just, there's so much going on. Keep in mind though, like
ribbed wheels,
Mini, this wasn't made for US customers. Mini sells less than, I looked it up, Mini sells less than 30,000 units a year in the US, and that's probably falling. So, you know, it's not like they did this for their giant US fan base. We're just the recipients of what they designed for Europe, really.
So Bruce, are you saying you don't like this car?
I'm saying I don't like this car, but thank you for saying that, because I also think Mini knows that. And I want to share this with you. From the kind of the speculation we're getting, the next gen Mini is going to look far different. Basically, what happened is between Brexit, COVID-19, kind of a general downturn, Mini had to come out with this refresh in order to, you know, have something that looked decent on the market until they could come out with something new.
So it's a stopgap.
Yeah, exactly. It's a stopgap. And so whatever they come up with next is going to be significantly different. That they, you know, they came out with this design in 2001, this kind of modern, the concept was 97, went on sale in 2001, you know, so it's been 20 plus years and it's time for a change. Like what it means to be a Mini, it has to change. Like you can't keep iterating on it. And know that. And it's going to happen. It's just going to be a little while.
And I mean, what's the incentive for somebody to go buy a brand new Mini when it looks so much like older models, you know? That's been my argument for the Challenger too. Why would I want to go get a 2020 Challenger? I can go get a 2014. Well,
they make other improvements over time that are, again, are more substantial. If the design is good, it has an element of timelessness to it. And it's good to have a generation of 9-10 years that all look the same. And then the only variations are just other improvements they made throughout time to the engine, suspension, to the infotainment and the interior.
I mean, I guess I disagree. I mean, I want to feel good, but I also want to look good too. And if I'm getting a modern if I'm getting a modern car, I guess I want something with a little bit more modern flavor.
Can I show you where I think Mini should go?
Sure.
Absolutely. This right here, the Mini Rocketman concept, which it is not a new concept. This concept is many years old, and it's just taking Mini back to its roots of a very small car. The Mini sold today is not it's not a small car like the original Mini was, and the Rocketman concept takes it back to that kind of size, almost like a smart car sized, maybe a little bigger than that since it's front wheel drive and the engine in the front. But I would love to see something like that, maybe all electric with and super high efficiency, just a return to your roots kind of thing.
I dig it. See, we agree on some things,
and I'm awesome. Also for this. Yeah, this is
unanimous.
So Smith, we started our first episode off kind of complaining about the current state of BMW. We're gonna end this episode also complaining about the current state of BMW, but in a different way. So do you want to take the lead on that?
Yeah, I'll take the lead here. Let me bring this up here because this car just came out today.
And this is not a bad car. It's just
scrap. This is not a bad car at all. This is the 2022 BMW M5 CS. We've been kind of dreaming about this car since the current 5 Series and the M5 came out. I think it was last June. BMW has, we're recording this. I mean, literally this dropped like a couple hours after we're recording this right now. So 636 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds. It doesn't have a massive grill. If I was in the market for a BMW and I could afford this, I mean, this would be my choice over all the others. I love the way it looks. It's not a 5-seater either. It's a 4-seater. They actually have buckets in the back, specifically in the back with a little center console in between. So presumably your backseat passengers can enjoy, you know, 1.2 G's or whatever it's going to pull in corners, right? It's going to go on sale in the U.S. later this year. It's going to go on sale in Europe in the spring. We don't have pricing in the U.S. yet, but BMW is only building this car for 2022, so it's going to be limited production. It's officially the most powerful M car they've ever made. Oof. with a 4.4 liter twin turbo V8, and I mean, yeah, 2.9 0 to 60. I mean, this is a fairly sizable sedan that's now rivaling hypercars, not supercars, hypercars.
Yeah, it's. I've been in a modern day M5 like in the last two model years, and it is, it's unbelievable that a sedan can be as powerful, quick and fast as it, you're right. It is a hypercar with four doors and four seats. It's unbelievable. It's a credit to BMW, despite all the other crazy stuff BMW is doing right now.
It really is. I mean, this almost makes up for the 4-series grill. Almost. Maybe if it had a little bit more horsepower. This is a great car. It has the Nürburgring, the 12.9 mile Nordschleife on the headrest.
Yeah,
and it was speculated that, well, maybe they put them on there because this car set a Nürburgring lap record for sedans. And I'm here to share some very interesting news. No, it's not interesting. That's still complete speculation. BMW didn't say anything about any records anywhere, but we've certainly seen prototypes lapping the Nürburgring quite often. So I wouldn't be surprised if we start hearing about some lap times in the future because it's a phenomenal sedan. It could have a phenomenal price tag. We don't know what it's going to cost in the U.S. yet, but in France, according to BMW's press release, it's 199,900 euros.
Oh, now, my Lord.
If you convert that to U.S. currency, that's like $240,000. Now, I want to stress, that's not U.S. pricing. It will most certainly go through some different settings, some different tweaks, whatever. And I don't suspect that pricing is going to be the same in the U.S., but it's still going to be insanely expensive. That's not my complaint, though.
Right.
That's all relative, though.
It's about the car, to be clear.
That's all relative, though, because a hypercar costs $1 million, is just as fast, and has two fewer seats. So I think this is a bargain.
It could be a bargain. You could see it that way. But when you buy your 250, well, let's be honest, you're not buying a hypercar for $240,000. Right,
exactly. You're going to spend four times as much.
You're going to pay a lot more. But when you drive down the street, people are also going to know exactly what you're driving. This is still a five series. This is still a 5 series what does a 5 series start at? Like 50, 60 grand or something like that.
Can you
somewhere around there, 70s. Somewhere in there. There's still that connection. It's the same connection that I won't call them snobs. It's the same connection that some people made with the Ford GT way back in 04 when it was coming out. It's like, well, if I'm going to buy a supercar, I don't want to buy a supercar that has the same badge as a minivan, you know, but it's still an amazing car.
Can I point out an interesting realization I just had? Is everyone probably knows that Chris Smith and I are both huge Ford Taurus SHO fans. I said that at the beginning. When the SHO first came out, it was so amazing at the time because people said it was an affordable competitor to the BMW M5. Look at the M5 today. Look at, imagine if Ford had to come out with a car that they would say, well, it's a more affordable competitor to the M5. It would have to be a Ford sedan with, you know, 550 horsepower. Like, that's how far BMW has taken the M5 since way back when. Like I said, it's an absolute credit to the company. It's their crowning jewel.
So Neff, what I just heard was that we have the Ford Taurus show to thank for the 636 horsepower 2.90 to 60 second BMW M5 CS.
What you heard is that I want an equivalent car with a Ford badge that costs half as much.
You listening, Ford? Get on board with that.
They can't do it. They don't have any more cars.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's bring back the Falcon. That's a discussion for a completely another episode. Yeah. Oh boy, that's opening up a can of worms here with me. We don't want to go there now. Where I do want to go, and this is now, granted, this is going to be a little bit of inside baseball. So anybody, any journalists that are listening, bloggers, today at the same time has the BMW M5 CS, the new Mini also debuted that Mr. Bruce was so kind.
Literally at the same time. The embargo.
They literally.
At yeah. 1 p.m. Eastern, correct?
Well, yeah. Yeah. They, it was 6 p.m.
Oh, I'm sorry. A minute off. Okay.
Yeah. 6 p.m. Eastern. They both were embargoed to launch at the same time. Of course, Mini is under the BMW umbrella. And this has been a thing with BMW for quite a while. So if there are any journalists listening, you know, I think what I'm about to say, especially if you had to work on both of these debut posts here today, and BMW, if anybody is listening from BMW, please, we don't need 400 photos for two vehicles, especially two vehicles that aren't all new. We had with the Mini, we had 237 photos detailing the car. Now you're probably thinking, oh, well, big deal. They send a lot of photos. That takes up size. The size means there's time downloading, cropping, getting things set up into galleries. And with Mini specifically, I mean, this is a mid-cycle refresh. I think there were probably 40 photos just of the bumper. BMW, we don't need
photos. Is kind of a norm outside of German automakers in general for a new model.
And with BMW, the M5 CS wasn't quite as bad. We only had 128.
Only.
We only had 128. Now, what's new on the BMW M5 CS versus what we've already seen? Well, it's got different wheels. It has gold trim, what they call gold browns around the grill, updated interior. But again, I'm talking a little bit of inside baseball here. It's one of the trials and tribulations of the work we do between these two vehicles. 400 photos from the folks at BMW.
These aren't small photos. These are like 25 megabyte a piece photos. They take up a lot of hard drive space.
It takes up space. It takes up time. And yeah, we don't need greater BMW.
Too, that unveiling, even though it's all under the BMW umbrella, unveiling two vehicles from the same automaker at the same time when it's not a major auto show or something like that, it splits the amount of concentration that any person can give to them. Like, obviously, sure, the person that's interested in a Mini isn't necessarily going to be interested in a BMW CS, but some of them are. Some are going to be enthusiasts and want to know about both. And you could have pushed that debut 24 hours one way or 24 hours the other and gotten way more views on your product by doing so.
Right. I mean, we're not talking about a major show. Yeah, it just seems like kind of poor planning on BMW's part. And of course, BMW hasn't been doing anything like that recently. They're not making any bad decisions whatsoever.
Not one.
Again, a little bit of inside baseball. But folks, when you go to MotorOne.com, we have debut articles up of the new BMW M5 CS, the refreshed 2022 Mini Cooper, both in Cooper hardtop, Cooper S, and the convertible. The convertible is kind of neat, I think. I know you guys are big on the styling, but
the Union Jack top is kind of cool.
I think that's really cool. Yeah. You can go to MotorOne.com and see all of those. We're going to put links to those articles too.
Yep.
In this article, this podcast article, when it goes up on MotorOne.com on Friday. And of course, if you're listening, Spotify, Apple, we're happy to have you with us. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Spread the word. Future episodes, we want to actually have some of you folks as guests on future episodes, because Bruce and I, we're car people. Neff, he's a car guy. We just want to talk with car guys. We want to talk with car girls. We want to talk with car people.
Yep.
We still can't go out to the pub right now and have a nice beer. COVID is still an issue. So maybe we can do a little bit of that here. Email us podcast@motorone.com. Bruce, do you got anything else for us here?
I got two quick things. First off, go ahead and email us. We didn't get an email this week. We missed you. You know, Nathan, who has been doing some really awesome renderings for us, we read his email last week. We featured one of his renderings this week. Same thing. If you got something cool to show it to us. If you want to tell us something, tell us. podcast@motorone.com. But also
good car stories. Yeah.
For lack of a better word, we're calling the car game. We don't have a good name for it yet. The idea is that for every episode number, we're going to try to find a car or a car based topic to go with that. So we're still on our single digits. So we're going with automotive fours, and we're going to skip four cylinders because that's easy. We're going to try models with four in it. I will go ahead and start simply because I've got some photos loaded. I am going to start with something that we referenced earlier, the new BMW 4 Series. And look at that hungry.
No, take that off the screen. What are you trying to do, Bruce? Kids watch this program.
But do either of you have any automotive fours, or should I share some more?
I have anything, John? I have one, and I'm trying to pull up a good image of it right now. So why don't you share some of yours, and I'll come back when I find a good one.
Sure thing.
I don't have an image, but Bruce, you'll probably bring this up, the Audi A4.
I have that. Yes. Hold on one moment. Here comes a first-gen Audi A4. That is such a good design. Look at that thing.
It's a handsome design, but all I see when I look at that is like $10,000 in basic repairs.
Oh yeah, it's a reliability nightmare.
You're right, though. It is, the design is classic. It is timeless.
It really is.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Here, well, John, while I'm waiting for you, I found this fantastic old press image. And our former guest, Jeff Perez, even suggested we should just do a series on good automotive press images. Here is a Renault 4 with a lady who clearly loves it.
Oh, yeah. That's a bear hug right there. Yeah. Press images were great.
We so need to do a whole episode just on bizarre press images.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't know. She loves that car, and good for her. John, do you have your photo up yet?
Yes, and you'll have to tell me if it counts. I might be stretching the rules. This is a Porsche Panamera 4 e-hybrid. So I didn't want to find a car that had was a 4S, like a 911 or something like that. This is, the 4 is by itself in this name. Panamera 4 e-hybrid.
I think that works. Like, Smith, I can't fight that.
I can't fight it. It's part of the name, Panamera 4.
Yeah.
But before I understood the rules, I asked Bruce if the Chevy 454 SS would count. And he said, no, but it will on our 454. fourth episode. So exactly. I will
keep that.
I will pencil me in as a guest on the 454th episode, and I will bring back that suggestion.
That should be quite a while.
Yeah, like 7 years from now.
But we'll still be going, hopefully.
Two more real quick here, two automotive fours, and then Smith. So I've got the Mazda RX-4, which is rotary powered, like RX.
Oh, look at that.
This is Smith's sedan version. They also made a coupe. So, you know, fun little 70s rotary powered car. And then I've also got the Mazda CX-4, which is, as I recall, that's the China exclusive one, right?
I don't know.
You know, I can't remember.
It's good looking.
Okay. I think
I don't think it was.
A lot of the modern Mazdas though blend together, like the CX-5 and the CX-30, well, CX-4.
Okay. This is, and you know what?
Definitely existed.
Here's another good example of why alphanumeric numbers are terrible for automakers, because they all sound the same and blend together. That's a topic for another episode coming up. I have a four that I have to bring up that I can't believe nobody else thought of. I mean, come on.
But we got to wait till episode.
No. I knew you were going to say that. This isn't 442. This is the old 4-4-2. Those numbers are separate. The first four stands for the four-barrel carburetor. The second number stands for the four-speed transmission. And the two stands for dual exhaust. That's a four, man.
All right. We'll give it to you.
Booyah.
You got me. Okay.
You got it on a technicality.
We're going to call it.
I never get by on technicalities here.
Exactly. I appreciate you spending your time with us tonight. In the morning, in the afternoon, whenever you happen to listen to this, thank you as always for the Rambling About Cars podcast. Bye bye.
And Neff, thanks for joining us here on the interview, and we'll see you folks next time.
Yep. Cheers. Cheers.
Bye bye.